You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Ginger Quill.
No, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story to Robert Pattinson killed a clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right! I said tune in weekly.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am Jeff Bear. This, my co-host, is Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, everybody. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's my co-host, Jeff Baer. Welcome to the only movie podcast on the internet, brought to you by OneOfUs.net.
The only net that has one of...
We should start researching these claims before we make them.
We might want to.
Oh, man, I just got a scary email. The subject
line... What? You're reading emails?
This is it's relevant. It's relevant.
Why we do this show?
It popped up on my thing there, and it's relevant to the show, because listen, this is just in. Breaking news. This is in all caps. The subject line is, what if your next selfie was your last? And it concerns a movie called Selfie from Hell. The anticipated horror film will have an exclusive preview screening at the Cannes Film Festival this Thursday. Oh, we will have missed it by the time the show airs. So yeah, those in Cannes, I hope you get a chance to see Selfie from Hell. The anticipated horror film.
With no one that we know in it. Do they have an actor that we can recognize the name of?
No. I don't see anybody involved. No. Man, we went to Cannes 5 years ago. It's the fifth anniversary of the time our listeners sent us to Cannes.
I was on Twitter this morning, and somebody was talking about how they couldn't find quick and easy food around the – what's the big fancy one?
The Palais.
The Palais. And – isn't that the one where just a little bit down toward the beach there was that really sweet little convenient stop that had the amazing baguettes?
There were a few, like, I don't know, they probably wouldn't call them food carts in France because they'd call them something fancier.
But I think they were circles.
Some food carts that sold, yeah, they had baguettes for like five euros.
Yeah,
ham and cheese,
like,
baguette.
As soon as that would be my main motivation to go back would be the food.
That's more baguettes. Oh man, I remember a dessert. I took a picture of it. It was this custardy, creamy pastry thing that we got at that bakery up by where we were staying. It was so good. Oh,
I mean, do you
man.
Remember how poorly I slept?
I do.
So I was like, it would be like 3 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. And my logic was, I'll try to find some NBA playoffs somewhere on the internet. And then I will be the first one there at 5 a.m. when this bakery opens.
Mm.
And so that's what I did. Yeah. It was weird.
Good times. By the way, when we say that our listeners sent us to Cannes, I should make it clear that we asked them to send us. Like, they didn't send us like as a punishment. They didn't sentence us to Cannes. We asked them to send us.
We did a Kickstarter, and I rolled my eyes and was like, it's not going to happen, Eric. And you were like, just you wait.
Don't you roll those eyes at me, I said. Sure
and you were right, sir. You were right. And it was an amazing thing. And thank you, listeners. Thank you if you are still listening and you supported our trip to Cannes. Thank you so much.
Because it's been 5 years.
was that you hinting?
I'm just saying,
guys, it's been 5 years. You've been listening, what have you done for me lately?
No, I'm saying I can't believe you've been listening for 5 years at least.
I know.
All right, now we're going to review some movies. Y'all ready for this?
Man, I just immediately wanted to be.
Yep. Alien Covenant. That's the movie. Alien Covenant. It's a prequel to Alien, I guess.
A sequel to Prometheus.
Prometheus. Yeah, it's a direct sequel to Prometheus, set about 10 years later. And
well, so not too direct.
Well, but there's nothing else between Prometheus and this.
Not
so far,
yet.
Unless they go and make some prequels, some mid-prequel prequels.
Right.
You may recall from Prometheus I rewatched it just before I saw the new one to refresh my memory, and I'm glad because I would have forgotten many things. You know how it is. We've got Michael Fassbender as a robot named David. And Covenant begins with a flashback to Guy Pearce's character. You remember that was Wayland, who had been funding
the creator of
the expedition, and the creator of David the android. Flashback scene to David's birth, I guess, and Guy Pearce. Basically, it's so that Guy Pearce can exposit for us, the audience, what his goal is. In case we forgot from Prometheus what the big plan is here, which is to find our creator. So that's reiterated. And then we got a ship called Covenant. It's a colony ship. They're heading out to a habitable planet they found many years away for Earth colonists to go live.
That's right. There's like 2,000 sleeping people, some embryos,
bunch,
I think a thousand of those,
yeah,
and then like
just
15,
just a big pile of fetuses of
I think
embryos,
a 15,
yeah.
15-person crew?
15-person crew. And the 15-person crew, everyone's in sleep stasis, of course, but the crew gets woken up early because there's a accident. Remember that movie Life, like a week ago?
Yeah.
So it's that. And the 15-member crew, Waylon has sent their 15 clumsiest dumbasses on this very expensive, very crucial mission.
They don't seem to have science at the forefront.
I was going to say 14 plus the 15th crew member is Walter, which is Michael Fassbender again as a different android named Walter.
Mm-hmm. David, maybe 3.0, we don't know.
Right, he's competent. So it's 14 clumsy dumbasses and then a robot.
Well, and it's 14 clumsy ones. The movie is stressing like they're on the crew because they want to end up on this planet, like building and living.
They also are colonists, and many of these crew members themselves are married couples.
Right.
So yes, they are part of the colonists, which makes sense. That's economic.
It makes sense, but still.
But it also means that, like, one of the first things that happens when there's this incident that wakes everybody up early, one of the crew members in his pod dies. And I guess I won't spoil for you who that is. It's a cameo. It's a famous person.
Right.
It's badly calibrated because the sight of this person makes you laugh. This person showing up in a movie, especially a serious movie, it makes you laugh.
Right.
There were laughs when we first saw this person's face. Anyway, that person dies. Catherine Waterston is his wife, and so she's sad. And he was the captain. So now there's a new captain, Billy Crudup, and Captain Billy is he's very unconfident in his authority and kind of
a little nervous,
kind of insufferable. Someone even uses that word to describe him: insufferable
and
kind of prickly.
He's, I guess, religious.
They mentioned two or three times that he has faith. He's a person of faith, and then that never factors into the story at all. And it's only ever mentioned when they're mentioning it.
Right. It's very odd that way.
I don't know what subplot was cut from there.
And so they end up, instead of going to this one planet they had researched forever, they get this distress signal, and they're like, well, this planet's a lot closer. Maybe it'll be even better. Let's check this place out.
Well, they can see this planet seems to be even more suitable for human habitation. So, yeah, let's check it out anyway. Maybe because it's, 7 years closer than the one we were going for. So they go down to the planet, and then everybody dies. You know how it goes from there. Go down to the planet.
Right.
Bad news. There's some aliens down there.
Weird. So when I was watching Prometheus, I remember being stressed and nervous at some of the things, like really, really good reveals. Oh my gosh, what's around this corner? That sort of thing. I did not feel that way in this one. I did not have the heebie-jeebies. And part of it is because we have some like soldiers that are just like walking around, stepping on the plants, not really caring, suddenly feeling bad, but not telling anybody they're feeling bad. That's a waste of time.
Very uncautious. And these dopes showing up on a planet they've never been on before, smoking cigars and cigarettes.
Yeah.
Very, very uncautious, very not scientific at all in anything they're doing.
Even as it's being revealed to us, it's not being revealed to the crew. So you have this feeling of inevitability where you're just like,
right.
Oh, okay, well, I know alien.
So someone's going to pop out of somebody's chest or whatever. Yeah,
and
I
already know like what's actually happening in this particular movie and who's behind what and how there's some manipulation going on. But the crew doesn't. So we're just kind of waiting there, and there's not enough crazy violence or scares with the little aliens or the bigger alien or anything else like that. And so you're just kind of like, all right, this is Michael Fassbender getting to play around with
Walter, Walter the robot. He's just like David, but he has an American accent and is a little more uppity. He's a little more opinionated.
And it just feels like, what's the point if I'm not being scared, if the action's not super cool? Like, why am I watching an alien movie?
There's nothing particularly special about it. I agree. And I liked Prometheus. We both liked Prometheus. And a lot of the hardcore alien fans did not like Prometheus. And I think it does have to do with how invested you were in the Alien series and how nitty-gritty you were with it. Because Prometheus, from what I gather, people thought was okay. It just wasn't a good alien movie. It just didn't belong in that. And I see that with Covenant here, too. It just doesn't feel... Obviously, it's using the alien design that, you know, as far as the creatures.
And there's more alien... Yeah, there's more creatures, of course, than...
But otherwise, it is a fairly plain, you know, outer space monster movie.
Well, like, there's... It's weird. Okay, Danny McBride's in this movie. He plays Tennessee.
Of course.
Danny McBride, historically, is known as being funny.
Right.
Here, there's not... There's no comic relief per se.
Not really.
And he's like in charge of a ship, and his main thing is like, should we go lower? I think we should go even lower.
Well, he just wants to save his wife. He just wants to get his wife. Yeah.
Right. But it's that thing of like, that's not interesting to have this debate of whether the ship should go lower or not every single time, because we know, again, the inevitability of an alien movie is taking place here. So, like, why? Like, this is just like mild distraction
from
something that could be more entertaining. And Catherine Waterston is our lead here, besides Michael Fassbender's character. Like, she's the lead human.
Yeah,
I'm not on board. I'm not like the Alien franchise has had much better female-driven leads here, and sure. I didn't feel like anything was all that interesting about her.
There's really nothing special about any of the movie. It's kind of drab. I didn't find it boring. I was, you know, sort of going along with it. Fine. All right.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's like they set up baseball. They established we're at a baseball park. We got a baseball team. We're going to play a game of baseball. And so we're like, okay, let's watch a game of baseball. And then, like you said, sometimes they'll throw in some other things to distract us. You're like, no, just get back to the baseball. Like, just get back to what we are expecting to happen here. Play the game that we came here for, and then they play it, but it's just sort of an uneventful. They go through the motions.
So for me, Matrix Reloaded, is that the yeah, that's the second one. It was good. Mm-hmm. It was intriguing. And then it was like, then that final, what is this third one even called? Matrix
Revolution.
Revolution. Then it was just like, oh, okay. Now that I've seen where you're going with it, two takes a hit because it wasn't intriguing. It didn't leave a lot of open questions. Prometheus doesn't necessarily take that hit because of this movie, but it feels the same thing in the sense of like, you're world building here. You're giving me something new. And then you just drop this in. And where this movie ends, I know that we're supposedly getting more alien movies.
Yeah.
Where this one particularly ends, I don't care at all where the next one starts.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Not interested at all in what happens next there. Which is sadly ironic because when I rewatched Prometheus, the way that ended made me think, oh, I want to see where they go next with that.
Yes.
And then they kind of just jumped ahead 10 years and didn't continue with that. Right. It's sadly mediocre. I give it a C.
Yeah, it's a 5 for me, and it is. It's very mediocre.
And then it's a diverse weekend at the movies. You got your big Alien Covenant for that genre, your big sci-fi space alien thing. And now we have something for the teens, the teen romance. And it's called Everything, Everything.
Two everythings and a comma in between.
Everything, comma, everything. And it is based on a book, of course, and it's about... Doesn't it seem like all the teen romances are where one of them is dying?
Has to be.
Apparently, a lot of teenagers are dying. Although, to my way of thinking, not enough.
Oh.
Or not the right ones.
There, that's better.
This is Maddie is her name. Amanda Stenberg is the actress. And she's got a situation. She's a girl in a bubble. Can't go outside.
That's right.
Or she's got SCID, S-C-I-D, which is a thing that means especially susceptible to illnesses or whatever. She can't go outside.
Yeah, conceptually, it's like you're allergic to everything.
Basically, so she's confined in her very sterile, high-tech house.
Thankfully, her mom's a doctor.
Mom's a doctor. She knows
so,
what's
like,
up.
So, like, that would seem to be a good pairing of, like, oh, well, that's – okay, good. Like, we don't have to worry about, like, you know, her not getting the best care possible. Like, the mom's on top of it. She knows what's going on.
You know who this is, Maddie? The actress played Rue, the little girl in The Hunger Games. Remember the little girl that
– oh, my gosh.
Katniss takes a liking to? Yeah.
Well, congratulations to her because she's grown up to be cute as a button.
She's lovely.
This, how old is she?
She is – oh, you need to know for – need to make sure it's all right. She's she'll be 19 this year. She's 18.
Right. She's a little girl, and she's absolutely adorable.
She is. She has a lovely face, like this sincere-looking, very open, eager kind of face.
It makes you want to smile. Mm-hmm. It makes you want mm-hmm. to like hugs and puppies and all that sort of thing. And what's weird is
a very innocent look to her. Yeah,
they've asked her in this movie that is, you know, kind of serious and sad in moments and surprisingly so in some. They've kind of asked her to stay in that one mode, it appears. Like she's bubbly and that's it.
Yeah, she has been weird. She's been sheltered from the world. She's got a full time nurse that comes every day and works with her, and the nurse's daughter is her friend, but no one else is allowed to come into the house, which didn't really make sense to me for most of the movie. Well, because they show that when the nurse or whoever comes in, there's a decontamination thing there in the doorway. So why couldn't you just do that for anybody, for any visitor? I don't understand the issue. But next door, new family moves in next door who have a teenage son named Ollie. It's played by Nick Robinson. They start talking on text via text message, and which the movie, to keep it interesting, shows that in her imagination they're sitting in a diner booth having a conversation.
Yeah, a little dreamlike. You know, I was thinking about that. That didn't work for me for a purpose, which was I wanted to feel her situation, and this movie never really attempts to do that. Like
her situation of being closed off from everyone?
Yes. Like, I didn't personally feel that, like, mainly because it never felt claustrophobic. It never felt uncomfortable, her being trapped. Well, and I kind of wanted that vibe a little bit to see her situation as opposed to seeing her imagination and the way that she's overcome it. Because, again, it's just then that bubbly personality, which is it's fine. It's just not dramatic.
I don't think the issue is that she was claustrophobic. Or ever supposed to be like trapped. It's more that she's lonely.
Yeah,
I mean, she's in it's a big, huge house with big windows. I never got that they were going for trapped or anything, but she's just lonely. And watching people have text message conversations is terribly boring.
Yes,
so I'm glad that it's something other than that.
And Ollie, you know, as any teenage boy who sees an attractive woman that he's curious about and seems nice, he wants to save her. Like, he wants to be the knight in shining armor somehow. He wants to connect to her. And we only get a little bit of who he is, and that's in the performance and in the background. Like, we don't learn a whole bunch.
Maddie and Ollie have conversations, and I don't think she ever asks him a question about himself.
Maddie seems really interested in herself and talking about herself.
Well, not even that, because she. I mean,
that's true.
She's hesitant to tell him about her situation.
Yeah, that was so surprising.
Once it is established that she has this illness and can't come outside and everything, then that's all they ever talk about. So he doesn't seem to ask her much about herself either. It's all they have to talk about is the fact that she's sick and dying eventually. And so it's about Maddie wanting to experience the world and how can she do that, et cetera, et cetera.
And it seems like Precious is the only kind of thing that they're going for here.
It's Precious, and it's very plainly romantic and sweet and simple, and for what it is, for sort of harmless teen romance, it's fine until the last act, where the story kind of does a cop out. Not kind of, it does. The story cops out on how to handle this, because the conflict is, here's this girl who's can't go outside or she'll die. She can there are scenes where she does, you know, is in person with
takes
Ollie,
a chance.
But just, you know, a limited amount of time, and then, you know, mm-hmm. not supposed to touch each other and everything. And so the movie gets itself out of that corner by cheating, and it's
feels that way.
It's an emotional cop out.
Not only is it an emotional cop out, but in the third act, there's just these moments where people need to be outraged, or people need to be there. There needs to be more extremes, and this movie wants to stay in the "isn't this precious? Isn't this nice?" Mm-hmm. Like that. That's the mode the movie kind of wants to stay in, and it needs to be bigger in every single way.
If you were to read the plot description, it would sound more outrageous than it comes across in the movie. It would mm-hmm. sound like, "Oh wow, this is crazy! I got to see this." But in the movie, it's rather nonchalant. And
yes.
Again, it's a cop out. It's fine up to that point.
Until that point, it's fine. There is some weird, like, I don't know why this bothered me so much. This is dialogue. Maddie says, "We could watch the fireworks. Like, do you want to come over? And we could watch the fireworks on so and so night or something.
4th of July."
Ollie then responds, and no, she doesn't say that.
Right.
Ollie then responds and says, after he's heard about, like, "Hey, do you want to come over and watch fireworks on this day?" He says, "Wait, Tuesday, that's the 4th of July." And that's going to be a line that just bothers me forever.
Okay.
Like, she just invited you over for fireworks. Like, why are you explaining right. that that's the 4th of July
yeah,
to her?
Yeah, 4th of July. That's why I invited you.
Yeah.
Dummy.
So I'm saying teenagers are idiots. As you were saying earlier, you're right. We're not picking the right ones to die.
Exactly. Also, they rent a car and they're both like 18 years old. You can't do that. I'm just saying.
So, if you've seen the preview, you know that there's like Maddie takes a chance.
Sure.
It doesn't feel like she's shocked by, like, I would have been more interested in this is somebody who supposedly has never left her house,
right?
And it's just kind of like she's like, "All right, cool, I'm hanging out with Ollie, this is cool."
Yeah, they don't do much with her discovering the joys of the world.
She's literally like interacted face to face with three humans in her life.
Well, yeah, she's not interested in the world, she's interested in this boy. No. Pretty
yeah.
much
yeah.
I give it a C+.
Oh, it's a 4 out of 10 for me. That ending.
Oh, it's not that.
Oh my goodness, that ending is disgraceful. And then she also, "I loved you before I knew you." I believe that is not a compliment. I believe that's an individual who's saying, like, "I'm actually not getting to know you. I just love, and look, you filled this void for me." Mm-hmm. If I heard somebody say, "I loved you before I knew you," I would distance myself from that person immediately.
I mean, it gives it sort of a sad, like The Graduate kind of ending. Like, oh, is this what we really wanted? Or are we too young to really understand what we want? It's like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, this movie is just like The Graduate.
Yep. 4 out of 10. Eric's being way too kind. So, like, without that ending, are you giving this thing a B?
No, like a B-.
Right.
It doesn't wow. like that the ending doesn't kill it. It just sort of
It insults me. That ending insults me.
And then also now for the kids, for the tweens, we have Diary of a Wimpy Kid: The Long Haul.
There's a colon titled. All over this franchise for me.
You've seen three of these movies.
Man.
And I no, you've
I think two. Maybe I've only seen two
you've
out of
seen
three.
Two, you've seen two, yes, and I've
and
seen two.
Three, Pat.
I've seen yeah. two, but not the same two. There was one that we both.
Did you hear
saw.
That, everybody? Now, did everybody listening?
There was one that we Sarah. Both saw, and then you saw another one, and I saw another one, and now I've seen this one. Anyway, it's the fourth one. I've only seen two of them, but I've identified what the problem is, and it's that these movies. Are live action movies about human beings in the real world, but what they want to be is cartoons about talking animals.
Mm.
Because these are based on a bunch of books for tweens, and co-written by the guy who wrote the books and director has a background in animation. And it's this kid, he's 12 years old, Greg. This time he's on a road trip with his family. His parents, let me tell you who his parents are. One of the stars of That Thing You Do and one of the stars of Clueless.
Awesome.
So our mid-90s teens are now our parents.
Yeah. This is the idea. Like, you're dragging your kid to this movie, so at least look at these two that maybe you considered icons previously in your life.
Tom Everett Scott and Alicia Silverstone. And he's got a moronic older brother and a little younger toddler brother. And they're all on a road trip to go to Meemaw's 90th birthday or something. And
Meemaw. I dislike the word Meemaw.
Well, yeah. And so the plot is just a series of very improbable and contrived mini crises, one after another. And they're usually predicated on something that isn't true, something false, something that would make sense to 11-year-olds. It's like the movie was written by 11-year-olds with no adults around to say, oh, but that doesn't make sense because, or oh, no, that wouldn't work because. Let me give you a for instance.
Thank you.
There's a gag where they're staying at a motel, and after going out into the, there's like a jacuzzi and hot tub and whatever, and then the boy, what's his name? What did I say his name was?
I don't know, Sean.
Greg. Greg then goes back to his family's room, gets into bed, and then wakes up in the morning and realizes that he is in the wrong room. He is in the room of the family that they have they've been butting heads with. This family they keep running into on the drive, which also doesn't make sense. It's like the family's stalking them. This other family they keep seeing, and Greg has accidentally slept in the wrong room. And so this is predicated on the idea of all motel room doors being unlocked, which, if you've ever been to a motel, you know, there's the opposite of that. The doors lock as soon as you walk outside.
It's very important for the hotel to continue getting business, right? Because otherwise, yeah.
Right. The gag could be, you know, that Greg left his room and didn't have a key to get back in. But no, it's based on this. There's another one where they stop at a country fair, and the prize at one of the contests is a live baby pig, which they give to Greg and his little brother. And they're like, oh, we can't take a pig. And everyone's like, all the adults are giving them the stink eye, like they're bad people if they don't take it. So they're, pressured into taking a baby pig, which, again, here the grown-ups would say, oh, see, that would never happen because blah, blah, blah. But 11-year-olds made the movie. This is the problem for me.
Hmm. Then you're making my 11-year-old dumb. Because my 11-year-old is going to think this is potentially how the world works. I don't like that.
And it's then usually it ends with a not even a punchline. It's weird that so many comedy situations they set up end not with a punchline or a payoff, but they just sort of peter out. Like just one where Greg goes out to the hot tub at the motel, and his brother dumps a bag of Cheetos into the hot tub, and so water turns orange, and he gets out, and his skin's all orange. But there's not like a big reveal of bam, now he's orange. It's just sort of incidental, and then he goes back into the hotel room, and his dad says, "Is your skin orange?" And that's the end of the bit. Next time we see him, he has washed it off. Like, all that just to not even... And that happens over and over again, where they set up some seemingly big farcical situation and then just sort of not see it out. And so
here's a question.
It just feels lazy.
Greg, is he actually wimpy? Because one of my main problems was he's just an arrogant jerk in the other movies. Is this one wimpy?
He's not especially wimpy. He gets picked on a bit. He becomes the subject of a embarrassing video that goes viral. So the movie is all about him trying to rehabilitate his reputation by getting into a new viral video with this guy who is a professional video game player. This is the thing the kids do now. They'll watch YouTube videos of fat kids playing video games.
It's called. Is that what esports is? I think that's what esports is.
I don't know. It sounds like the devil's work to me. Yeah. So he wants to go to this convention, this gaming convention, and meet this famous game player and whatever. The film, basically all the characters are dummies, but the film relies on the audience being too young to realize that.
These films oh my God.
just bad.
I hate them. I really hate them.
This one's a D+.
Okay.
Now we need to update the Summer Box Office Challenge. The 7th annual Summer Box Office Challenge. Let's see the standings, where we are right now. At the moment, so far, I've had three of my 10 films have come out. Those films, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, King Arthur, and Snatched. Now, I'm not going to try to trump this and say that this is what I wanted. I'm not going to say this is what I had in mind. I would like King Arthur to have made more than $15 million. I would prefer that King Arthur had made more than that.
What did we... do you remember because I asked you like what your like hunch was or hope. And I'm gonna keep doing this because I love this part of it too much. So sorry, I'm always gonna ask.
I don't know what my hunch was.
I think it was like 30 to 60, right?
I had like 40 million seemed to me to be a plausible thing that would happen. And it did not. In fact, but then Snatch actually made more money. Snatch made $19.5 million,
right?
Which is fine. I'm okay with that for that.
It's okay for a second to last pick. $19 million is
for
okay.
Comedy, yeah,
it didn't bomb. Like that's really your hope with your second to last movie. Yeah. Like my second to last movie is Captain Underpants. I just hope that doesn't bomb.
King Arthur.
It's not going to. It's going to make more than $19 million.
But man. you know, I wouldn't count my chickens before they've been released.
Oh, I am so confident right now. It's ridiculous.
I'm sure
it
you
feels
are.
Great. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like I'm in the hot tub right now.
Yeah.
Like, no movie's coming out. Everything's feeling good. My fear would be that I would fall asleep in the hot tub.
I'm going to dump a bag of Cheetos in.
There you go. But right now, it's like a victory cigar. Like, I'm really close to grabbing it. If the mummy, Captain Underpants is my first one.
Yes.
And then the mummy is my second.
Yes.
If those two movies combined get anywhere near like 75 million, we can just call it if you want. You can start being a clown now if you want.
No, because then Transformers The Last Knight is going to bomb. That was your second pick, and that thing is going to fail.
It's not going to bomb.
No, backlash. Transformers, it's going to bomb. Plus, it opens on Wednesday.
Yes, but I've been writing to just about every human being in the world, but mainly focused in the United States, mm-hmm. about like activities they could do on a Wednesday or a Thursday that really aren't available on the weekend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So. Like happy hour specials, that doesn't, you know, a lot of weekend like restaurants, they just ruin that. So, you know, should do that on a Wednesday or a Thursday that week. All right. So the question for you, mm-hmm. you have Alien Covenant.
I do.
So what is your gut saying it's going to do? And what are you like happy with? You hate playing this game, but thank you for playing this game.
These questions don't make any sense to me in my brain because what was the first part of it? What is my gut?
Yeah, what's your gut say that Alien Covenant's going to make?
I don't know. I guess there's a thing people do where they predict the box office and
they do.
Tracking. How's it tracking? They say, but I don't know how that is configured. So I don't know what my gut is. But my gut normally would be for any movie like this, 40 million. You know, big summertime thing coming out, part of a franchise. All right, 40 million.
I'm going to guess 30.
Right.
Low 30s.
That's okay. It's okay.
You'll be okay with that?
Not as okay as I would be if it's 40. let's say, what if I'm not okay with it? Then what?
It'd be nice that you would feel bad about your pick.
Okay, I understand now. I was just trying to understand what you were getting at.
It'd be nice for you to be like, oh, no.
You're hoping something will happen that will make me
feel
bad.
Here's the thing. Last summer,
yeah.
when I
totally crapped the bed.
Totally crapped the bed, but I also kind of knew it. It just, like, it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it.
Yeah.
I don't feel that way this summer right now.
None of your movies have come out yet.
That's part of it.
It's easy to be optimistic when none of your plans have failed yet.
I know. I know.
So the Summer Box Office Challenge off to a rousing start. This week on DVD, it's another slow week. Just Resident Evil, The Final Chapter, and XXX, The Return of Xander Cage. Resident Evil, The Final Chapter, we watched this. I don't know why we watched this, but we did.
Because we hadn't seen it.
That's not really a good reason. But
now we know that.
Well, we could have guessed. It's it's about as bad as the other ones.
It felt a little worse. It felt like a downward direction.
I hate the
cutting. It's overly edited, and
that's
it
how they
makes it
all been though.
Not as much. The last one that turned into like that game show aspect of it or whatever.
Yeah.
That had a slightly different style, and I enjoyed that a little bit more. This one just makes me feel like it's like. College kids made this in their backyard.
I feel like they've always been edited all to hell. The kind of thing where even when nothing is happening, the cuts are like every 1.5 seconds. We cut to new angles of somebody just sitting there doing nothing or whatever. And then I won't spoil the end because Jeff was asleep for it.
Like a glove. I don't know what that means. That doesn't work.
So do you want to travel in time?
Ooh, yeah. You, are you going to play the theme music?
Sure.
All right.
Jeff and Eric's Excellent Adventure. Now, we've traveled in time. We decided to travel, not randomly, but to choose a weekend. 25 years ago. May 15th was the weekend then.
1992. I was still 15. Hadn't turned 16 yet.
So what grade were you? You were a sophomore?
Yep.
All right. I was a senior. I looked at my journal. I kept a pretty good journal at this time. And I looked and I didn't write.
Wait. Was there a time that you didn't keep a pretty good journal? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I started when I was like 14.
Oh, okay.
And I don't really anymore.
Oh, really?
Not good one. But I looked and I didn't see any movies this weekend. But as it happens, this was the weekend where I broke up with my girlfriend. The one girlfriend I've had in my life, Charlotte. She and I, this weekend was like where ending. Yeah. Pretty significant event. I mean, it was doomed anyway.
Why? But, because you're Mormon?
It was more the gay that got in the way of that one.
Although
I was genuinely attracted to her. Anyway, it was not working out, and we had sort of gotten tired of each other, and so I was reading through what I wrote in my journal for this weekend, and yeah, all about that.
Now, hang on a second. You're not getting off the hook that easy. You did not give any detail whatsoever of how the breakup happened.
Well, we had sort of been, it had lost its luster, and we had decided a couple weeks before this that maybe we should just not hang out as much.
Okay.
Because we're getting tired of each other.
Now, wait. You keep saying we. Like, it was a magical thing that you
time. We discussed it. We both were feeling the same way, that it was getting old. What?
Well, it sounds a little like Seinfeld. It was the perfect breakup. You've only had one girlfriend.
I don't know what to tell you.
And then you had the perfect breakup.
I guess it went about as well as breakups could go. Yeah, because we both realized it was ending. It was fizzling.
Either of you at the time suspect that you were gay?
I knew that I was, but I wasn't really. I was taking my interactions with Charlotte to be a strong indicator that perhaps I was mistaken.
Oh, okay.
That maybe
okay.
I was.
Yeah.
There's some other options. But then, yeah, I think I wrote in my journal that, like, I realized I just kind of really don't like her anymore. So over the weekend, we were going to hang out, and then we didn't because I didn't feel like it. I just didn't want to. Oh, that's right, because we wanted to go to the movies, but her parents said we couldn't go to the movies, but I could come over and hang out at her house. And it did not sound appealing at all. Come hang out at her house.
So if you just would have gone to a movie, maybe you guys would be married with like 8 kids.
Maybe so. But so we didn't hang out, and I went hung out with my friend Aaron instead. And then Monday at school, before school, broke up with her officially, and she concurred, and it was, yeah, an amiable parting.
Shook hands and parted ways.
I mean, yeah, and we continued to be friendly to each other after that. But we were in drama, you know, in drama together and everything.
Oh, okay. And by the way, I didn't mean to downplay it. I didn't mean 8 kids. I meant like, you know, a dozen or whatever. So, sorry.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what would have happened if her parents had let us go to the movies?
Yeah. That night. I mean, seriously, the movie that we'll get to eventually, it affected me pretty powerfully. I like the idea of going from number 10 on up the list.
At the box office here.
We're looking at the box office. Number 10, City of Joy, starring Patrick Swayze. Did you ever see this?
Never heard of it.
I never saw it. Number 9, Ferngully, The Last Rainforest.
Not theatrically, but I, you know, on video at some point saw that.
Same here. I remember liking Robin Williams as the little bat or whatever he was.
And this
was
the first one 25 years ago. Didn't they make like a million video sequels?
Yeah, I don't think it's... I don't think it's to the stage of The Land Before Time,
that's
but I think
I, that's
there's
right,
a
that's
lot.
What I'm thinking of The Land Before Time. That's right.
Land Before My Time, bad. I think there's like 13 or something insane.
The number 8 was The Babe. Oh, about the talking pig.
No, The Babe.
Oh, The Babe.
About the talking Goodman.
John Goodman, the fat baseball player.
I saw that eventually. Did you see that? That was boring. Man, that movie's...
never saw that movie. No.
Oh, so boring. It bombed. I remember that at the time.
I remember the ads for it.
My Cousin Vinny, number 7. By the way, the 7th movie? Yeah, that's $1 million at the box office that weekend.
Yeah.
I didn't see it in the theater.
I did.
I was shocked when I saw it, like, how good it was. I remember seeing it. It was one of the my lunch movies, which meant when I was in high school. So this would have been my junior year that I saw it. So we watch, you know, we get our Wendy's and we go to my house, and me and my friend Tim would watch half a movie on one day and then finish the movie on the next day. We had enough time during lunch to do that.
It's the way the directors intended.
Yep.
My Cousin Vinny, this was its 10th weekend at the in theaters. It had opened back in whatever that means, February or March. March. And I saw it at some point in theaters, and I actually just rewatched it not too long ago on HBO Go, sort of had it on while I was doing other things. And
still holds up, right, I assume.
Delightful movie, yeah. Yeah, quite a fine movie. And, of course, Marissa Tomei won an Oscar for that.
That was a big surprise.
It was.
That was when, like, that was the beginning of Best Supporting Actress was always a shock.
Maybe, or it was the first time we were aware of it anyway.
Yes.
Maybe.
Number six, Wayne's World.
Been out for 14 weeks. That came out in February.
14 weeks.
I had seen that opening weekend. My friends and I went and saw that when it opened. I remember that.
I believe I saw it 5 or 6 times in the theater. And I got the soundtrack, and that was my first discovery of Queen.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
When I was 15.
Yeah, yeah, because we were huge Saturday Night Live fans, of course.
Yes.
Senior year in high school. So an SNL movie, Wayne's World, big deal. Very big deal. Number 5 was The Player.
Tim Roth? No.
Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins.
Robert Altman directed. Tim Robbins is in it. I didn't see that until much later. That was not my tempo at the time.
Same here. I mean, especially 15. Come on. But when I did finally see it, it didn't click for me. I knew it was supposed to be – I knew that people thought it was cooler than I thought it was. Maybe I'm ready for a rewatch.
Yeah, I should rewatch it too. Robert Altman was always kind of hit or miss on that way for me. I generally felt like I was not quite getting what he was laying down.
Number 4, White Men Can't Jump. I saw it twice opening day.
Oh my gosh.
Saw it in the afternoon, saw it at night.
Why?
Why? Because it's great, and it was like my first great, besides Hoosiers, it was like the first great basketball movie, and I loved basketball.
Mm. This White Man Can't Jump had been open for 8 weeks, and I had seen it, must have been before this. I saw White Man Can't Jump while on a camping trip out in to Joshua Tree National Monument, that whole desert area out there.
Yeah, Joshua Tree,
yeah, that's what it's called. Anyway, I was there camping and rock climbing with drama teacher Mr. Duke and two of my friends, Mike and Andre. The three of us and Mr. Duke were out camping and rock climbing, and it was like just for the weekend, and one of the nights we drove to whatever the town was nearby and saw White Men Can't Jump in the theater.
All right.
Did you ever go camping with your drama teacher?
I don't know what that's code for.
Right. Looking back, I see so many potential.
What's his name
potential.
Again? Mr. Duke?
Mr. Duke. Good old Mr.
Oh,
Duke.
Oh, man.
He was great. And, you know, he was only like 29.
Oh,
which
boy.
Now I think of a 29-year-old, the high school students, like, those, you're the same age. That's the same thing. At the time, it's like, we knew he was young for a teacher, but he was still, you know, a grown-up.
Yeah.
But now, 29's barely a grown-up.
I agree.
Good old Mr. Duke. We saw White Men Can't Jump. And nobody molested anybody, if that's what you're worried about.
Because you were 18? Is that why you're saying that?
I wasn't 18 yet, no.
Oh, you weren't.
Okay. I was underage still.
Number 3, Beethoven. I saw it at some point. I never cared, whatever.
I've never seen Beethoven.
No. Charles Grodin's in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Does he play the dog? There's a big dog.
No.
All right.
I think Martin Short plays the dog. Anyway. Number 2, Basic Instinct.
In its 9th week, Basic Instinct hanging on at number 2.
Yeah. And this movie, just like Wayne's World, I think I saw it like 5 times in the theater. Oh. But I mainly went with my friends Carrie and Katie.
I would have been embarrassed to see this movie with girls.
I was so excited to do it. I was like, oh my gosh, really? Like, we're all thinking about sex and we want to see this movie? Sweet, let's do it again.
I guess. Did it work?
No. But Katie and I had, gone out
mm-hmm.
together in 7th grade.
Oh, sure.
And Carrie and I never did.
That's
the end of that story, I think.
Basic Instinct I saw with another friend. I was on vacation with another friend and his family at Las Vegas area or Lake Mead.
And then it was late at night, and there was a knock on the door.
No, we
and
watched
it. And it was Mr. Duke.
We watched it on... I want to say we watched it on HBO. That would have had to have been later. I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, Basic Instinct I saw eventually, and it was very dirty, and I was...
you had? I mean, yeah.
I was shocked and appalled at how dirty it was.
I was not.
And the number one movie this weekend, 25 years ago, new release, big new wide release, Lethal Weapon number 3.
I love these numbers. So Basic Instinct at number 2 made $3 million. Mm-hmm. Lethal Weapon 3 opens at $33
million. It's pretty good.
Yeah. This is the one with
Joe Pesci. At today's ticket prices, that'd be $70 million, by the way.
That'd be $70 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Pesci as Leo Getz,
mm-hmm.
a character that I did not find particularly funny.
I think I remember finding him funny with my buddies when we went and saw this in the theater. You'll appreciate this. I'm not sure that I had seen Lethal Weapon 1 and 2 at this point. Because they come out before I was of like movie-going age, like you know, where I would drive to the theater with my friends.
I remember watching both of those, late at night when we'd get a free HBO weekend and, you know, everybody was asleep and yeah, cause it's still, in my house, I would say it wasn't encouraged that I see R-rated movies, but they didn't put up a huge roadblock. I just had to kind of wiggle my way around to do it.
You weren't going to flaunt it either.
Yeah. No, I wasn't going to be like, Mom, Dad, Basic Instinct. I did it again. Cause I was buying tickets for Wayne's World. The theater must've thought like, over the course of like 2 months, I probably bought what, a dozen tickets to Wayne's World. but you know, half the time it didn't go. I'd forgotten that Darlene Love played Danny Glover's wife in these movies. Darlene Love, from, in my opinion, David Letterman.
Christmas Baby, Please Come
Christmas,
Home.
Yeah, Please Come Home. But yeah,
that's right. I forgot that was her too.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering, people want to remember what else was going on in the world in May. 1992. Well, we just had a bit of the old riots, the old Los Angeles riots, the Rodney King thing.
Yeah,
that had been at the very end of April. I remember that, you know, because I was in Southern California. We were like an hour and a half from L.A., an hour and a half to 2 hours from L.A., but we were close enough to where we wanted to feel like we were part of it. So like we were really, really hoping that there'd be some riots like at our school or something. Like we really wanted to be part of the drama, but we weren't.
Living in Iowa, that felt like a foreign country. It didn't make sense that it was happening.
That was
pretty much my perspective.
Johnny Carson was about to host his final episode of The Tonight Show, and that would be May 22nd, 1992.
Bette Midler.
That was a big deal in those days.
That's a big deal for me. I'm assuming that was a big deal for you.
Oh yeah. I can't believe he's been off the air 25 years now.
Yeah, what's he been up to?
Oh, he's dead.
Oh, that's right.
I hate to break it to you.
It was my hope and dream that he was going to come back and host the Oscars before he died.
Right.
I really hope Letterman does something to that extent.
Before he dies. Yeah, that'd be nice. Oh, May of 92. Shows would have been ending. Let's see what shows were ending. Because these would have been some shows we watched, I'll bet.
I watched everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, MacGyver. MacGyver ended.
Well, you know what's really weird? For some reason, I never got into MacGyver. It never made sense that I didn't, but I didn't.
Seemed like a show you would watch. Oh, The Golden Girls. The Golden Girls was just ending its run. Who's the Boss? It just ended. The Cosby Show had just ended.
Who's the Boss ended with Tony teaching at Iowa.
Oh, really?
Yes. He became a writer, and he was moving to, I don't know if it was University of Iowa that he ended up teaching at, but yeah.
Well, that's
very
odd. That's funny. Oh, Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, Cosby Show, Golden Girls, all ending their runs this month.
Man.
May of 92. Whew, it was a bloodbath. But, you know, some new shows started.
And that's all he has to say about that.
Oh, The Real World. MTV's The Real World began in May of 92.
I watched it.
I think I watched some of that first one, too.
I mean, at the gym this morning, I just watched The Challenge. I haven't let that go yet.
I know you're still obsessed with that.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. And it's not a guilty pleasure.
If you enjoy it, there's nothing to feel guilty about, I guess.
Speaking of guilty pleasures, we had asked our listeners to either email us or put it on Facebook. Any questions you might have. So this is a mailbag question, and we're answering it right now. Film question: do you believe in the concept of guilty pleasure movies? If so, do you have any?
This question comes to us from Ben Birdwhistle.
Birdwhistle.
I feel like that's a pseudonym, but yes.
It doesn't seem like it. It seems real.
Birdwhistle. Anyway, Ben. No, I don't believe in guilty pleasure movies.
I don't believe in them either. I'm somebody that I feel bad when people tease me, but I like Patch Adams.
Oh man, Patch Adams.
I know.
No, it's
but it's not
movie.
A guilty pleasure.
I know. Well, yeah, and I think it's all it's definitional. Like the example Ben gives, he says, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening is a terrible movie, but I have watched it multiple times and I always giggle uncontrollably while watching it. So, and I think I wouldn't call that a guilty pleasure. That is, that's taking pleasure in a bad movie. I do that sometimes too. Watch a bad movie and it's fun, but it's not a guilty pleasure because it's not like you're saying it's a good movie. You're not embarrassed.
Yeah.
You're watching it, you know, for the purpose of enjoying its badness. And I
like
if somebody
has decent taste in movie, like they're like, yeah, I really like, you know, Shawshank Redemption and I really like, this and that. And then they're also like, and you know what? I just love those Diary of a Wimpy Kid movies. They should feel like that's a guilty pleasure. That would be the definition. But nobody is that way.
Yeah.
Or
if somebody said they like Patch Adams. Like that person should feel guilty, obviously, because that's a terrible movie. But they don't.
Man.
Yeah, if you enjoy it, you can enjoy it. And guilty pleasure too often is what people say when they liked a movie but feel like they shouldn't have. Like it's not what smart people do.
Right.
So often,
or it's like if they watch a reality TV show of some sort and they're like, it's my guilty pleasure. And it's like, no, it's your pleasure.
Just enjoy it. Enjoy it.
Ben, listener Ben, we see your other questions and we will get to them on another show. We have so many personal questions to answer
maybe.
Now. I love this. You know I love this. I love that people actually asked.
I know.
Good job, people.
But here's the other thing. Ben's other question. How close to real life is the cartoon logo for your show?
Oh, okay. Well, we'll ask it now. Never mind.
Look at our Facebook page and all the pictures of us. Done and done.
Now, see, here's one thing.
What?
This might be why people might not want to email us.
What do you mean? How are we supposed to answer that question? Look at pictures of us. You'll see how close the cartoon is. Like, how are we supposed to describe that on the show?
That's true. I've never thought of myself as somebody who looks like somebody from Blue's Clues, though, Ben. So that was a first for me.
Yeah, I don't get that either. And that brings us to the end of the show. Here's what we got. We had Alien Covenant, which we didn't care for.
Oh.
Everything, which I think is fine if you're a teenager who wants a romantic drama. But which you hated. You were insulted by it.
That ending.
And Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, is bad, like the other ones. So if you like the other ones, you probably like this one too. And you should feel guilty, but you don't. Just own it. Just enjoy those movies and accept that you have bad taste. And so that's it. And so until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.